This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to our weekend recap. The Rafa Benitez experiment is over at Everton and the search for a new coach begins. And I'm joined, of course, by my American slices of Wonder Bread, Jimmy Conrad and Heath Fierce, to dissect the Toffees' trials and tribulations. Plus, two Serie A newcomers come up big for their new teams. Real Madrid clinch the Super Cup and Arsenal push the Premier League's postponement rules to their limit. And with two rounds of AFCON action in the books, Tosin McKenzie returns to give us all the lowdown from Cameroon. Qué golazo weekend recap begins right now. Everybody, welcome to Qué Golazo. Thank you so much for being part of the family. We're on Twitter, Qué Golazo Pod. Heath Pierce is here. Jimmy Conrad's here. I'm here, LME. And of course, make sure that you listen to it and leave a rating and review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, CBS Sports, and your CBS Sports app. So much goodness. Jimmy Conrad in the hizzy. How are you, buddy?
You know what? I'm not great. You know, Newcastle's struggling. You know, I mean, even if you support a team named United, I think in the Premier League, minus Leeds, you had a tough weekend, and I fall into that camp.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to get into your Newcastle United later. I'm sorry, buddy. But, hey, Heath Pierce, you are still locked up in that footlocker.
Yeah. How are you, buddy? I'm doing okay. It's good to see both of you again. I got my juntos es mejor, Jimmy. This means together is better. And when I'm with you guys, I'm happy. And, you know, this is always better together. So
I love it. You're freshly shaven, Heath Pierce, as well. You look good, man.
Yeah, I don't know. My wife just kept saying shave, and then I finally did it. And whenever I do it, I go, why? And then it takes a couple days. I mean, Jimmy, I'm used to Jimmy getting that clean shave. But for me,
I want to see Jimmy with a beard. Jimmy with a beard would be amazing.
Maybe. I feel like I want a mustache, and it's just it doesn't come in very well. It's a little patchy. It's not pleasing for anybody. And I think I could get arrested walking around with that.
Well, dude, listen, you have the great those Danish genes, I think, Jimmy Conrad, because you look so young. You and Heath Pierce look great. Well, welcome, everybody, to our weekend recap, our call to action. This is live, en vivo. So please leave a comment, a question. Our good buddy, a legend, Tosin McKenzie, joins in a second to talk about AFCON, because it's absolutely insane. AFCON, some great stuff going on over there. But we begin, of course, in the Premier League. And let's begin with some news, actually, Heath and Jimmy. Everton, after losing to Norwich, playing yet another terrible, terrible game, do the obviously unavoidable, the thing that we knew it was coming. Rafa Benitez is done. I believe the statement is on the screen if you are watching on YouTube, or it will come very soon. But that means, Jimmy Conrad, six managers in 8.5 years since David Moyes left. I believe it's five since Roberto Martinez left. What do you make of it? Rafa Benitez out at Everton.
You know, I just want to applaud Rafa Benitez. I mean, we always knew his heart was with Liverpool, and now he did the special agent, went over there and sabotaged their biggest rivals, Everton, and he did it some real style. Even got Lucas Digne sold. I mean, what a masterclass from Rafa Benitez. This might be one of his greatest moves since winning the Champions League after being down 3-0 to AC Milan. Way to go, Rafa Benitez. That's like, I got plenty of time for this.
I like Jimmy's perspective on this. Obviously, I was, you know, if you go through the process of it, fans were always upset from the very beginning for obvious reasons, as Jimmy just mentioned, for Rafa Benitez to get there. But then you go, man, how spoiled could a fan be to not accept that this manager could do really great things, which he never ended up doing? I just look at the club again, and I think about the fact that, you know, the sporting director is out and Rafa Benitez stays. Usually that's a war of heads where they say, okay, differences of opinions. he leaves, get a new vision in. Maybe you bring in a new sporting director, your vision for the future. Rafa Benitez wins that war, but then Rafa Benitez, we're hearing about him and falling out with Dina and other players like that. You just go, man, after a while, if you're the club, you go, I don't know, maybe we got it wrong there. Maybe Brands should have stayed around, but either way, we're not getting the results. Let's just get rid of everyone. And that just seems to be what they're doing. They're selling their best players. They're giving up their manager. They get rid of a sporting director. I just don't know with this kind of dumpster fire, when you look at it from the outside looking in or even the inside looking out, who wants to be a part of this quote-unquote project at this point?
Yeah, well, that literally is the perfect segue there, Heath Pierce. Who wants to be part of this absolute mess at Everton? If you're watching, please leave a comment. What do you think? Is it justifiable that Rafa was sent? Is it more than Rafa? Who do you think should come in? Miguel, I feel it would be a bad idea, but curious to see what Jesse Marsh could do with Everton. Jimmy Conrad, what do you make of that?
I mean, I would be pleasantly surprised if they actually considered Jesse Marsh. Bob Bradley being a real only foray into the Premier League when he took over Swansea. They gave him, 87 days before sacking him, before he even had any time to do anything. So that felt a little unfair to Bob. So I'd like to see a team give an American a real chance. And I don't know if it's going to be Jesse Marsh this time around, but they've really got nowhere else to go but up. And I think he's got that spirit that maybe they're lacking, that togetherness that I think he can
but
do.
That's just like, you know, going from RB Leipzig saying, yeah, we're going to kind of give you a shot. And he was part of the family to go into Everton and getting it. Do you think Jesse Marsh? What do you think of that?
I think that's just a hard – I mean, no one even looked at RB Leipzig this year and called it a project, right? He was just supposed to take on the reins of RB Leipzig without any of the players that made them good. Or, you know, including injuries, including young players, including transitioning players out. It was it was in itself a project, but nobody called it that. And he had trouble, you know, kind of getting those players to buy in. Now we're seeing what's his name go back to Ajax and score two goals on loan away from RB Leipzig, who just
Brian Brobby.
Yeah, Brian Brobby, who got his chance because what's his name's at African Cup of Nations. That's a conversation for later on. But yeah, I would love to see Jesse Marsh go there, but I just look at it and I go, well, if you're any manager and you look at the amount of managers that they've funneled through over the last 8 years, that doesn't feel all that safe. Yes, Everton are a massive club, and they still have quality players, and it does seem like they're missing a little bit of just somebody to come in and give them a hug and bring them into the right direction and believe in them and know that, hey, guess who also isn't the team that they once were? Manchester United, and they're going through their own things right now, and you're not that big, but you still are something valuable, and it still means something to wear the crest, and so somebody's got to come in with that mentality, maybe – with some connection to the club or something where they're going to give him a little bit of time. We're seeing with Ranić now, yeah, people still don't like him, but at least he's starting to get some sort of results, losing only one in his first 10, I guess, as manager. You need somebody like that.
The Ranić situation, Heath, is also different because they know that eventually he's going to leave. They're looking for somebody permanent in the summer. But Natalie, Everton is where managers go to die. It's a little harsh, but I kind of agree right now. Everton's not really good. By the way, you were mentioning there, Heath, about somebody that perhaps has a history of it. Well, Roberto Martinez, Jimmy Conrad, seems to be the front runner. There's also talk of Wayne Rooney as well, but he's doing some miraculous things at Derby right now, even though they're not totally out of it. Perhaps Duncan Ferguson, who's been there forever, deserves another shot. Why would anyone, Jimmy, want to manage the Toffees? Why would Martinez leave the golden generation Belgium in a World Cup year?
I feel like it would be somebody that has something to prove. Frank Lampard kind of jumps to mind. He's 13-2, the odds right now. He's the fourth favorite. Wayne Rooney, 6-5 to take over, which I find kind of interesting. I would be reluctant if I was him to maybe step into this situation. Duncan Ferguson, 7-2. He's second favorite. Roberto Martinez, 4-1. I don't think Roberto Martinez is going to come, even though he did have, well, at the beginning, he had a successful stint. He got them into Europe his first year with Everton. Then it started to not look so good the following two seasons, and he got sacked in 2016. Graham Potter, Paulo Fonseca, Nuno Espirito Santo's name being thrown out there.
I mean, it's just anybody right now, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know.
One thing I wanted to add, Michael said that he was like not going to work for a while because he wanted to see his family. You know, we're just throwing names out there.
I'm just saying,
like,
looking at the Mets.
You know,
I don't know. Yeah. All I wanted to throw in there was the fact that the kids use a phrase today called washed, and Rafa Benitez is washed. I just don't think he is going to ever regain what he once had as a manager. And I think this is the last we're going to see of Rafa Benitez for a long time, unless he, you know, picks up a club that's, you know, middle table somewhere else, maybe in Spain or whatever. But Rafa Benitez at the top level, I think, is done.
Jimmy, is Jose Mourinho washed?
There are a lot of comments about Jose Mourinho being washed, but they won today, so let's just ease off of him. You know,
I just wanted to see if I could put you on the spot. And you
answered. No. I can understand why people think he's washed.
Jose Mourinho is being washed, being put back in the dryer, then come out and washed again. I think. Hey, Ilias. Ilias is in the house as well. In the live chat, to our regular viewers, thank you so much. Make sure that you subscribe, leave a comment. Heath, final thoughts on Everton for a second. Paulo Fonseca, was there a comment as well? Thank you so much. But who would you want? I mean, who do you think is going to get this?
I don't know who's going to get it, just because, again, I think you're playing the game of, like, when we looked at Ralph Rangnick, nobody expected that at Manchester United. It was an option off the wall because it came with a certain level of clout, but also circumstances, knowing that he was the stopgap to the next thing. It was like prefaced as that, right? Where, okay, maybe if he exceeds all expectations, he gets the job and he wants to be in contention for that. But I feel like Everton need a little bit of time to figure out where their journey goes on next to here. When I think about Roberto Martinez, you're right, he's in a golden generation. I guess the golden generation is probably getting close to its end with Belgium, but they're he's building something on that. I was actually out at coffee a couple days ago here in Dubai with somebody who played under Roberto Martinez in the Premier League, and he was like, I don't know if he's a manager that can light the fire that you need. He's a people manager. He's very good.
You're name dropping without name dropping. Yeah. I need to know who this. Who is it?
That's because I'm on a runaway train right now, and I'm afraid that Dez, our producer, is going to chop it right at the thing where I quote tweet the guy.
Damn it, Heath. Who is it?
That he said to me. He's a Dutch guy, and he played in the Premier League.
Steven PNR? I don't know.
No, and he lives in Los Angeles. I'll give you that much. But he spoken basically about saying he was in the locker room with him, and at times was like, man, you got to light this fire. I mean, he said he was unbelievable tactically, but when it came to that motivation in the team, sometimes the players would ask to have their own time to, like, light a fire and say, hey, it's got to be better and whatnot. And obviously this was a long time ago when he played for him and he was a new manager. But when you think about going into a locker room and having to have that mix of earning respect and having – a little bit of an iron fist while knowing exactly, you know, in the modern game of management, ego management, of knowing, hey, I got to hold everybody to a certain standard here. And sometimes that means I got to be angry. But that also means that guy you got angry with, sometimes he needs a hug, and knowing what players need that type of thing, whether he has that in this type of situation. Again, Jimmy said it, all they can do is go up from here.
I'm not sure if all the way they can go up, because now that, you know, Norwich got a win, and, you know, even though Newcastle tied, they're not that far away from relegation. They're not that. I'm just going to say that. So it's going to be intriguing to see where they go. Let's move on, because we got some more games in the Premier League to talk about. And one was a cracking one. You mentioned, Jimmy Conrad, that the only United right now that should be celebrating is Leeds United. 3-2, by the way. What an absolute victory. Jack Harrison, former NYCFC player, studied and played at the US, in the US as well, scores a hat-trick as well. Unbelievable. And they win 3-2 against West Ham, doing, by the way, Arsenal a favor by beating West Ham. Jimmy, talk to me about this game, by the way, specifically because Leeds were depleted and, you know, they kept going with their game, and North London Derby was supposed, so much to talk about, but let's talk about Leeds United for a second.
Yeah, I just want to mention that on the third goal, because it looked at 2-2 when West Ham came back and tied it to make it 2-2, the momentum in the second half was all in their favor. And then Rafinha, and I actually thought, let's get really into the tactics a little bit. I thought Leeds did an excellent job of allowing Issa Diop, one of the center backs for West Ham, to have the ball. Just let him have the ball, give him a little bit of pressure, and then make him force tough passes into tough spots, which we know are coming. And then we're going to try to win the ball and transition from there. And that's what led to the third goal in particular. And Rafinha's ball to Jack Harrison. God, inject that straight into my veins.
That was art. That was just beautiful.
Oh, I love Rafinha. And I don't know how much longer he's going to be at Leeds, but he is a special player. And I thought Jack Harrison was fantastic. Congratulations to him for getting his first ever hat trick at the senior level or whatever it is in the Premier League. And just how his finish was excellent as well. And just a great game from him overall. I do want to say, I thought Leeds went out there and stuck to their game plan for the most part, super vulnerable defensively. And I think you can always, if you're down to them, you always have a chance to get back in. But David Moyes came out and said that he thought it was unfair because they were forced to play against Norwich. They had a game that had got postponed earlier to play Norwich midweek. And he didn't think that was fair because Leeds didn't have a game midweek. And now they're missing players as well. And he was pissed. And he's like, I don't think the schedulers understand that what rest is and what recovery is. And they're just throwing games in to throw games in without really taking into account what it means to actually recover. And I agree with him wholeheartedly in that. Now, fair play to David Moyes, who also said that wasn't exactly the reason why we lost. We didn't make the plays that needed to be made. We didn't finish our chances and we gave up silly mistakes, but that still needs to be part of the conversation. And they asked him a little bit more about why Arsenal and Tottenham got their game postponed. And he's like, I guess I got to be a little bit tougher on this. So I'm curious to see what David Moyes is going to do with that moving forward, because it did feel a little unfair that Leeds had a whole week to prepare and West Ham didn't.
Yeah, the only thing I would say to that, I agree with everything that Jimmy said there. The only thing I would add to that is that Jimmy just kept on mentioning, and shout out to Dan, by the way. Dan is another one of the regulars, so appreciate it.
I know. He was a little upset that we didn't say his name at the beginning. Dan Kane, this specific segment right now is for you.
This is sponsored by Dan Kane. Listen, actually sounds like a cool brand. I would buy it.
I know,
But what I'll say about this is Jimmy kept talking about tactics, and I don't know if what Leeds do are tactics. Last year it seemed like tactics, but I think they just thrive in chaos, right? Jimmy mentioned, they stuck to their game plan, super vulnerable defensively, and I think that's just what it's been. And again, I always equate this to players that we didn't know about last year then and having great years to the players this year, that same player not having that great of a year because people found out about them, right? I see the same with Leeds, where people found out about him, they were like, let's take a step back for a second and try to figure out what made Leeds so good last year. And it was the chaos, right? And this chaos, again, reigns supreme. I agree with Moyes' comments. I think that's got to be super frustrating and difficult to go through. But you're playing against Leeds, a team that's very vulnerable. You were back in the game at some point, so you can't really pin it on that. But I think the systemic issues happening in the Premier League right now feels like each week or each midweek a new manager is coming up with a reason or having a completely valid reason to complain about the scheduling and the fact that their head-to-head matchups are not equal, so to speak. Having said that, though, if you were to separate all of that, they still play in three competitions at a minimum within the league, right? And there are still uneven matchups because of the fact that the Champions League clubs and the other clubs are still playing more games. And so they're constantly having to, and I get their budgets are bigger, so I don't want to give them any sort of pass, but there's never really a balanced schedule when you are a team in the Premier League, unless you're at the very bottom and you get knocked out of things and your only focus is surviving in the Premier League, but then you're doing it with a weaker squad and less depth. So I feel like there's always this give and take, no matter what the circumstances are, but I do have a little bit of empathy given the state of things with COVID right now.
Yeah, when I was growing up and my mom would say, make sure your room is clean, I would take that, very general. I would hide I would hide shit under the bed and do the absolute least minimum to make sure my room is clean. When my dad asked me to clean my bed, he had a list and he was very specific about what he wanted, where he wanted my shoes and whatever. So my point being is that if you want to fix this entire situation, the Premier League needs to be way more specific about what they think or they want and they require when it comes to postponing a game, because I'm not even blaming Arsenal.
But Luis, my question for you is like, what I'm trying to figure out what that could possibly mean, right? Because everybody has a different
level. I'll tell you what it means. I'll tell you what it means. Fair enough if like you have players that are gone to AFCON. Fair enough if you even loan out players without realizing that you got some COVID issues. You do remember that about a year ago at Aston Villa were forced to play an under-18 game, under-18 players against Liverpool. My point is like sometimes you might have to suck it up and sort of involve like a couple of under-23 players. Like, I'm sorry, you just have to in order to... again, my blame is not on the club. It's on... I think the Premier League needs to be more specific about what they mean, about who on what constitutes a postponement. That's all I'm saying. I think... So that to
I'm
me...
Cool with that.
Yeah, I again, everybody thinks that we're like... Blame Micah Richards went crazy and like, why is everybody going on Arsenal? It's not about the club. To me, it's about like the Premier League. Everybody's taking advantage of a loophole. I mean, why not? Right? I would, right? The Premier League needs to be more specific about what constitutes postponing a game. Once you know the specific rules, then your room's going to be really clean. Anyway, let's move on. Liverpool did win 3-0 against Brentford. The Reds now 11 points adrift of Manchester City, by the way, with a game in hand, as Man City beat Chelsea. Jimmy, is the title race over?
Yes, it's pretty close. I would say that with a game in hand, and this was a good performance from Liverpool, I thought Fabinho in particular was excellent. you know, they beat the team that they should beat. And a team that actually gave them trouble last time they faced each other. If you remember, it was 3-3. That was at Brentford, and they got a little pluck to them. But I thought Liverpool came out and were in complete control of it for the most part and got a good result. 8 points, if they can get that game in hand and get to 8 points, it's not insurmountable. But Manchester City, very professional in how they approach this type of stuff. So it feels like the league is over. But I don't want to count it out, man. I'm a, you know, I like a little drama in my life. I'm a romantic. I want to see something that, you know, gets down to the last weekend, but it's looking pretty hard pressed at this point, unless something happens in the Champions League or there's a significant injury. The thing is, City and Liverpool can probably cope with injuries pretty well. Well, Liverpool, maybe not as much given what we saw last year, but yeah, it feels like it's done.
I will say this. I think that the title race is done. When I looked at this match, obviously Liverpool are another team missing a number of players, specifically their two best players. But they scored just before the halftime, and Brentford actually gave them a little bit of trouble. Yes, Liverpool dominated the stat sheet as we expected they would, but Brentford broke through a few times, had a few chances, a few swings of momentum that didn't go their way, that showed some vulnerabilities again in Liverpool. When I think about this over the next 4 or 5 months with the amount of matches that they have, whether they have their best team on the field or not, I just see them slipping up at some point. And I don't think there's almost zero margin for error for them for the rest of the season, because Man City might give up a point here or there or 2 points here or there and draw something, but they're not going to lose a couple games in a row. And I just don't see how Liverpool would have to basically win out for the rest of the season, at least in my opinion, for them to have a chance. And I just, when I watch that game, even again, I know they're missing players and I know it's in the thick of the season, but the way that they, just the chances that they gave up, I go, man, that is not a title team at the moment.
Mm, yeah. Well, here are the rest of the results, by the way. And yes, you see that bottom one right there? Felipe Coutinho, you know, just needed 14 minutes to...
That was sick. Yeah, it was sick, dude.
How amazing.
He brought some serious energy, and I loved every second of it.
It was absolutely unbelievable. Anyway, you know what else is unbelievable? The African Cup of Nations. Absolutely ridiculous, this tournament right now. Absolute insanity. So many results. I'm not even going to tell you what happened, because I'm going to bring on our hero right now, Tosin McKinney.
Tosin.
Wearing the Super Eagle shirt. Tosin, first of all, how are you, my friend?
Well, I'm great. Nigeria is great. So what else can we say? I'm great. How's everyone doing?
We are good, my friend. Thank you for being here. And we know Super Eagles fan, Nigerian, Tosin McKinney is Nigeria. Keep killing it. But what we're going to do right now is we're going to give you a quick update, a recap of the tournament itself. It's been absolutely fantastic so far. Some drama all over the place, specifically today, Tosin McKinney. So why don't you give us a little update, I guess, on the first, I guess on today. What's the biggest headline from today?
Well, I don't know if it's official or not, but Algeria had a 34-game winning streak, and that ended today. They lost to Equatorial Guinea. Before the tournament, if you had told me Algeria would lose to Equatorial Guinea, I'd be like, you're a liar. But then again, I wouldn't, because this is AFCON, and nothing makes sense, but everything makes sense at the same time. So them losing to Equatorial Guinea, basically, they have to beat Ivory Coast on Thursday to qualify. And Ivory Coast has a couple of guys that you would probably know in the defense, someone like Eric Bailly and Serge Aurier. And then you also have a really good midfield. So, you know, it's this tournament, I love it, because it's so much chaos. And like, for example, Sierra Leone tied against Ivory Coast last minute. The goalkeeper tried to come out and save the ball, and he slipped. Tore his ACL, I think, and then they scored. So Serge Aurier had to go and goal. So, yeah,
just to emphasize that last moment there, Serge Aurier had to go in goal because their goalkeeper, Sangare, absolutely lost possession, tore his ACL, and Sierra Leone equalized in the final stoppage time minute. That's just insane, Tosin McKinney.
And that's just today. That's just what we saw today.
That's really just that's since I woke up.
Yeah. Just like within like a 3-hour window. That's all we saw today. It's just that. So,
hey, Tosin, I got to ask you, though, on the Algeria front, obviously they won the Arab Cup with a makeshift squad different than the squad that they put together for this. They were on pace to potentially tie, if not break, this streak record. I mean, what is it about this team that made them fall apart in this one? Because it just seemed like when I watched them for a bunch of games and they were vulnerable at times in the Arab Cup. When I watched them in World Cup qualifying, they've been vulnerable at times, but they still seemed a way to at least get a draw, if not a win. I mean, how do you fall apart like this? I mean, what are the circumstances like in an African Cup of Nations that can make a team that's so good on pace to break a historic record set by Italy fall apart and lose a game where they don't even score a goal?
I just think it's just the tournament itself. I think one of the things I said before, and I say it every single time when AFCON starts, they don't respect who you are. Like, a lot of these guys, like, you got guys who are playing the fourth division in Spain. They don't care if you play for Man City or AC Milan.
Those guys that play domestically in Equatorial Guinea, from what I was reading, that are.
So the guy who scored plays in the fourth division in Spain. Literally plays in the fourth division in Spain. So these guys literally do not care. They, like, I don't care if you play for Man United. I don't care if you play for Aston Villa. I'm going to do what I want to do for my country. And I think that goes into it. Also, I think Algeria, like, I don't know what it is with them this tournament. Like, the first game I saw them play, I was like, they don't look cohesive. They don't look like a team. They look like they're just not happy to be there. I mean, obviously, it's factors, like, weather's a factor and, like, some of the pitches aren't that great. But, like, you would expect a team like Algeria, who has enough, you know, they played with each other long enough to, like, know how each other plays. I mean,
yeah, and part of the reason of that streak was because of your point. They were cohesive. They were collective. And right now, you don't see that, Tosin.
Yeah. So,
yeah, can I just point out that people always ask me what the hardest level I ever played at was, and I said high school soccer, because the players were so bad that if you did a move, it didn't work on any of them. Like, if you did a step over, they were still standing in the same spot when you did the step over. That's how I equate what you're explaining to me right now, where it's like they're not it's not falling for anything. Sorry, Jimmy. Go ahead.
I mean, with regard to Algeria, it feels like they might have too many luxury players. The fields aren't good enough. The whole infrastructure is not good enough for them. They're the defending champs. They want the red carpet. That's not how it works, as Tosin has rightfully explained. Now, Tosin, I had Senegal as my pre-tournament favorites to win, or at least the team I was picking. I know they've never won AFCON before, but I just like what their team's about. They seem pretty well balanced. They're not doing so hot. They've only scored one goal. It wasn't even in the run of play. It was a penalty. And now I'm thinking, okay, after two match days for everybody, who do you think is now the favorite? As you mentioned, Nigeria looks great. Cameroon, the hosts, look fantastic. Morocco's look very good. Is there anybody else that's standing out for you that could be now maybe tournament favorites based on what you've seen these first
games? Mali. I love Mali a lot. I look at that midfield, I'm just like, man, that's a really, really good midfield. That first game they played against Tunisia, it was Bissouma who came off the bench. Mm-hmm, and I was like, for you to bring Bissouma off the bench is insane to me. Like, that to me alone is insane. So I really, really like Mali a lot. So
All right. Well, listen, I need to ask you, though, because we haven't brought them up yet as much. But Nigeria look ridiculous. That first game against Egypt, Mohamed Salah, I believe, had the least amount of touches he's had, I think, ever internationally. And I think definitely in the last season and season and a half, from a club perspective, you were all over Egypt. And then you get another win, 3-1 in the second game. How confident are you about your Super Eagles?
Very, and at the same time, not. I mean, I've been watching Nigeria. The first Nigeria game I went to was 1994. So, like, a lot of people, like, want to know, like, I've been watching Nigeria for a very long time. I was four. I went to go watch them against England November 16th in the original Wembley with the Twin Towers, so that Wembley. And I've been watching Nigeria ever since. And the one thing about Nigeria is that, like, we could be very serious and then we could be very unserious. Like, 98 World Cup, I cried. I remember that because we lost to Denmark 4-1. We were supposed to beat Denmark. And we just came out and just didn't do anything. And the same thing we do all the time. So we look good. But it's just like Nigeria's the sort of team that they will go and beat, you know, Guinea-Bissau on Thursday or Wednesday, whenever we play. And then we'll go lose to a team like Equatorial Guinea because that's just what we do. But I think this team right now is way more together. I think Agbafon, because he's played at this tournament before, he's won this tournament, he's played in the World Cup, like, they know and have respect for him. Like, he's like, listen, I'm not here to play games. We're here to do this. So I'm very confident team. I mean, like, and you can see, like, the talent level is ridiculous. Like, we don't have Emmanuel Dennis. We don't have Victor Osimhen, and we're still doing this. You know, yeah. Like, we're still here. But my only concern about Nigeria is that midfield. When I saw us play against Sudan, I saw little things where I was just like, if we play against a team that's similar to us, like, as far as, like, levels, I'm scared that, like, our midfield is light. I love Joe Rebo. I think Joe Rebo's talented. I think Ndidi's talented. But I think that we need an extra body in midfield. So that's where, like, someone like Kelechi Iheanacho or Chukwueze has to get dropped. And I think it'll probably be Chukwueze. But I want to see Frank Onyeka in that midfield with them. I think that gives me a lot more security if I see someone like Frank. So,
good team.
I like that. Hey, I got another question for you. What happened to that referee from the Mali Tunisia game?
Yeah,
What's the latest on that?
Yeah, still have heat stroke.
He's in Vegas. Yeah,
apparently had a heat stroke, but, like, I don't know what happened. Like, literally said he had a heat stroke and, like, he wasn't feeling too good, so he called the game. And that was just a mess. But I mean, like, I think one of the biggest things when people talk, look that up, I think I tell people all the time, like, referees make mistakes everywhere. Like, I've seen it in the Premier League. Like, we all seen it every single week in the Premier League. We've seen it in La Liga. I mean, referees make mistakes all the time. It's a hard job. I'm a former ref, so I know it's a very, very hard job to do. I'm not sure what happened to him, though. Apparently, it was a
heat stroke. Why are you former? Why are you former?
Yeah, why aren't you current?
Why aren't you current?
Referee was the worst job I ever had in my life.
I respect that, man. That's
trying to, like, trying to make money. And the last thing I did, I loved it. I kicked the parent out. I took the ball, got super power hungry, took the ball, and told the parents that I'm not starting this game until you go back into your minivan. And I did. So that was my last time. Never do it again.
Okay, if you were part of that game, I need to see footage right now. I need to see that. I need to expose and echo the hell out of it. Tosin McKindy, an absolute pleasure. Nigerian Scams on Twitter. Make sure that you follow him, of course. All the great content that he does for CBS Sports Golasso as well. Those great videos, you and Aaron West, when you go on the NYC streets and do a little man on the street. They're great. Tosin McKindy, thank you so much, my man. Final thoughts. Before we say goodbye, because I know that you're a Manchester United fan. I don't know if you want to do that.
Well, my last thought is that United need to fix their midfield. I said that since, like, my high school, senior, like, my senior high school in 08. I've said that for, like, what, like 12 years now? The last thing is, please, if you guys really want peace in life, don't let Nigeria win, because I'm going to make everyone right here. So don't let Nigeria win.
He will be the absolute hell in Twitter. And I want to see it. I want to see it. Tosin McKindy, thank you so much, my man. I appreciate you.
Tosin
McKindy. Absolutely fantastic. I need to see that video of him reffing and kicking a parent out. Unbelievable. All right, listen, everybody. We are going to take a break. If you're watching this live with us, that means a half second. If you're listening on audio, it's like a 15-second commercial, whatever. But we will be right back because we're going to talk a lot more, including Serie A, Spanish Supercopa, a USMNT watch, and much, much more. Qué Golazo Weekend Recap. We'll be right back.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailor Brands.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Qué Golazo, our weekend recap. Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce. That was Tosin McKindy with the AFCON recap. But let's get into it. Let's keep going here. By the way, our producer Desnars always reminds me, please thumbs up, subscribe, hit that bell. Also, comments, questions, hot takes. We want to see them in the live chat. Don't forget. All right. Heath, yep. Atalanta, Inter. We thought it was going to be a goal fest. Ends up 0-0 in Serie A. Does that help anybody?
Honestly, it should have been a goal fest. If you watch the first half, it was... look, I know 0-0s don't help the stereotype of Serie A. This was one of my favorite 0-0s that I've watched in a long time. Especially the first half, it was going back and forth, attacking in and around the goal box. It didn't have a slow rhythmic. It was all-out attack. Obviously, second half, I think Inter dominated the run of play for the most part. But on the flip side, like every 6-7 minutes, Atalanta would come back down with a clear chance on goal. And it was a super, super exciting thing. It felt like as it started to get later on, that was like, okay, it looks like Inter are happy to get the draw at a minimum. I'm not saying they weren't playing for the win, but it did look like they were settling into saying, okay, let's just start to take away some of these these counterattacking moments we're giving to Atalanta. Let's be a little more balanced in our approach. And also, Alexis Sanchez had some huge chances. Arturo Vidal had some huge chances. I don't know what year we're living in, but it was an incredible game overall. I think this plays well into AC Milan. But for Inter to get a point against an Atalanta who could have gotten points as well, for Atalanta to get points against Inter who dominated the run of play, I think for the most part of more parts of the game than Atalanta did, I feel like it's a fair result and both teams leave happy.
Yeah, I agree with Heath. He makes some good points there. I called the draw. I went on Paramount Plus today and did a little something with the crew there with Serie A and called the draw. I also said that Jose Luis Palomino, one of the center backs for Atalanta, would get a yellow card. And he got it in the 84th minute, you bastard. I absolutely love you. I appreciate you, big guy. So I hit a couple of my bets. I was excited about that. But I did miss a big one, which is I thought both teams were going to score. They're two of the highest scoring teams, not only in Italy, but in all of Europe. And they have so much firepower at their disposal. 0-0 is not what I thought we were going to see. But to Heath's points, there were plenty of opportunities on both sides. A couple missed passes, a little sloppy, I thought, in the first half. And nobody really finding that clear-cut chance or to have that composure to take it. So, yeah, a really good game between two very good teams. They split the points. Nothing really changes. Will AC Milan take advantage? They probably will, but I still feel like Inter are somewhat clear of being the out-and-out favorites to go on to win the league. I think there's still some issues with the consistency with Milan, but yeah, it was a great game. I'm a big fan of Gasperini, the manager of Atalanta, and the team overall. I thought they missed Duvan Zapata a little bit because when he's up high, you know, that it allows whoever, whether it's Malinovsky or Pasalic or Ilicic or Luis Muriel. I love Luis Muriel behind me. I just think that guy's a fantastic player, but he can pick up the ball a little bit in between the pockets and allow Duvan Zapata to stay high. But when Zapata's not there, he's got to do that by himself and allow other guys to do it. So it makes it a little bit more difficult for him to pick up the ball. But yeah, I love both of these teams. I'm excited to see how the rest of the season plays out for both of them, both domestically and in Europe.
Elsewhere in Serie A, by the way, Sergio Oliveira made an instant impact at Roma. He even takes some penalties, so he got that one as Roma win 1-0 against Cagliari. Nani, who is part of Venezia now, as well, instant impact, gets an assist for the equalizer there. And Andrei Shevchenko didn't last long, sacked as part of, I don't know, what was it, last six matches, something like that, just was not getting the results. So that's a shame there as Andrei Shevchenko gets sacked. And what else? Oh, well, we got
McKinney.
Yeah, that's where we're going right now. McKinney gets another goal. Jimmy, right back to you, man. That's a pretty damn good performance right now. We were talking about the most informed USMNT player. He keeps living up to expectations as Juventus wins 2-0.
Yeah, no question. I thought it was a good performance from Juve overall against Udinese. I was curious to see how they were going to respond after losing in the 120th minute, heartbreakingly, against Inter Milan in the Supercoppa Italiana.
Great photo.
So Weston McKennie scored in that game, scored in this one. You know, he does a very good job of drifting into the box when the ball goes wide. Makes it hard to mark players. Now, I'm not going to completely compare him to Frank Lampard, but Frank Lampard was very good at this too, making those late runs when the center backs or the holding midfielder are looking at the ball and you can start to drift to the back post. He's very, very good at that. And I think Frank Lampard maybe hung around the top of the box a little bit more, whereas Weston McKennie likes to get to that back post and look for that back post cheddar. But yeah, when he's in the team's different. I actually thought Artur played pretty well today for Juve as well. And they're looking to move him in January. It's always weird when you see a player play, like, wait, do they want to keep him? Or are they just trying to market him as he's healthy and he can play so they can sell him? I don't know. But Dybala looked good today too. So despite some losses and some players, Juve's still hanging around. And this was a big win for them today.
The only thing I'd add, because I agree with what Jimmy said there, is that Weston, and you compared him to Lampard hanging out in and around the top of the box, he seems a lot more comfortable in those places than he did before, right? Mm-hmm. And when I look at earlier parts of the year, he kind of looked like he was doing what he thought he was supposed to be doing and not doing it confidently. He kind of looked like he was second-guessing himself in terms of his, is he taking his first touch backwards or forwards? Is he combining? Is he doing stuff because he feels like a teammate's demanding the ball or it's the right pass? And when you look at him now, he seems just – if you didn't know who Weston McKennie was, right? If you were sitting next to me and I'm sitting in a pub here or something, you would see a really good player on the field. You wouldn't look it through the eyes that we do where we're overanalyzing. And I think that's a good sign. He looks like he blends in again. He's playing his part and playing his role. And I think that was missing for a while, where he just looked like he was a step off, not confident, second guessing himself. And I think that's a huge step forward for him. And we've seen this now for a couple of months, right? He's played 4 games of 90, then he's played a few more games in the middle, then he had another run of games before that. So he's in a great run of form right now. I sent him a message saying, hey, man, keep it up. Keep up the form. And he read it. And he didn't respond, but he read it. I just want to let you guys know that he read it.
He read it or his PR team?
Okay. Yeah, it just said scene on it. Yeah, it just said scene on it. You know, I was just looking for this. Like, thanks, man. I'm going to keep going. But I just filled out the response in my head. And it was just like, you know, it was more of a humbling to know that, like, when he was on a couple hundred thousand, he used to get back to me on that stuff. Now he's on a couple million followers. And he'll give me the red, you know, maybe he's up laying around playing video games and no response. But I just wanted him to know that, you know, shout out Weston. I'm thinking about you. Well,
his entourage turtle version responded. Yeah, that's exactly
sure. What happened.
Let me ask you a quick question to both of you. I'll go back to Heath and then Jimmy, you jump. But just very quick on McKennie. I mean, obviously Allegri sees him every day and that's the relationship that he has, et cetera. But it sounds to me that ever since that iffy moment there with the USMNT and Greg Berhalter kind of, you know, dealing with it, he's kind of turned a new page here. He's a little bit more focused, Heath.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if that was a great conversation or it just seems like that had the recipe for two very distinct responses, right? One, which is, you can't tell me anything. I play at Juventus. I make millions of dollars a year. I'm the best national team player. I'm the best U.S. player. Or I'm the best player in the U.S. I've done it the right way. My career path. I'm only 23 years old still, blah, 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 blah. Or the response is, yeah, that's a wake-up call. And I don't know who's in his circle. And I know Jimmy talks about those inner circles and support systems for Ricardo Pepi and these other players going through the same challenges. But his response has been phenomenal. And he's done it all by literally what he does on the field and his attitude and all those types of things. You go back to the summer of Nations League, and he didn't play huge roles, but he had the clutch gene, right? He came up in big moments, but he wasn't the leader in terms of the build-up play and all the things that we want from a player at this level. Mm. But now you're seeing him sort of round the corner into different pieces of his game. You talk about Allegri, and I'll make this short, but Allegri sees him every day. And we've seen all these different parts of Weston McKennie, and we look at him through these different lenses of, like, bad boy and, like, infamous to leader to whatever as he goes through this career of his. But right now it just seems like whatever happened, whether that's the national team plus the club team, or it's his team or it's his agents or it's his family, somebody woke him up and told him he needed to get it together because he was on the verges of becoming, you know, kind of almost reputationally bad, where it doesn't matter how good you are, the next team has to want to take a chance on you, and that could spoil you at this age. We've seen a lot of players get a reputation, whether it's for partying or whatever, at 23. By 27, they're in a tiny little league somewhere just living off of the money that they made, and then we're going to talk about them, about what they could have been. And he just seems to have woken up from that. I think it's a great shot, Luis.
No, I agree with that. And it seemed like a pivotal moment in his young career as to which kind of player he wants to be, both on and off the field. And when I think about it, when I look at him now, it looks like he's enjoying himself. And what you had said earlier, either Heath or you, LME, is he maybe was trying too hard to fit into Allegri's plans. Obviously, he was maybe playing a different role under Andrea Pirlo. Pirlo clearly trusted him, but it seemed like Allegri was like, I don't know if I really care for this guy or how he plays or how does he fit into my style. Then he has that trouble off the field. There was some stuff, there's some talk about it happening also in Turin where he's going out a lot. And now that flowed over to his U.S. men's national team. And now, like, what are you going to do? To his points are all very good. So he comes back, and now I think he was trying really hard to fit in, to do exactly what Allegri said, to earn the trust back of that team and also the men's national team and get it all together professionally. And now, since he's worked through that patch, which I think is very important to him as a development of a player, because he's going to go through another patch. Hopefully it's not due to behavioral issues, but just form, right? Something's not going to work for you. How do you regain that? Now he's lived through it. And I think that's really important, that you just go to work, you try to get better than you were the day before. And at some point you're going to work through it, and then you're going to start to enjoy how you're playing again. And that's where he is. He's in that sweet spot where he looks like he's having a ton of fun, and it helps when the team's getting results as well. And he's a big part of that. So long may that continue. Hopefully it translates into success for the U.S. men's national team as well. We need him to be clutch for us. We got some big games coming up here over the next couple of months, and I'm excited about how he's playing. And he's definitely, without a doubt, the best men's national team player right now.
Yep. So basically, advice from the boys here: whatever you're doing, Weston, keep it up. Oh, and respond to Heath's DMs.
I get left on red by all these guys now, man. I get left on red by all these guys. You know, it's humbling, but it's the role that I play as the mentor for the U.S. men's national team.
I love it. I love it. All right.
Asking for no advice from me, but I'm giving it anyway.
You know? I love it. All right, let's move on. The Spanish Super Cup. Athletic Bilbao did a great thing by beating Atleti to get to this point. Maybe there was some hope, but no. Real Madrid turned it on 2-0, by the way. Some goals. The first one from the great Luka Modric. Fantastic goal. And the second, a penalty from Karim Benzema. And Thibaut Courtois, if you didn't see his penalty save, it was pretty acrobatic. Amazing stuff. But that means Marcelo, by the way, who, you know, coming towards the end of his career, equals Paco Gento's record of 23 titles as a Madridista. Pretty amazing from them, Real Madrid. Let's do just an overall roundup of Spain, and then you just give me your thoughts, boys. But Copa del Rey, Real Betis 2 against Sevilla 1. Game suspended on Saturday after John Jordan was struck by a flagpole. After Fekir scored an Olympico, by the way, and Canales scored the winner behind closed doors. In 2007, Sevilla coach Juan de Ramos was knocked unconscious when he was hit by the head with a bottle thrown by a Betis fan, by the way. And in La Liga, Elche 1, Villarreal 0. Anything from that there, Jimmy Conrad, including the Super Cup?
Yeah, I'll go Super Cup final. I think Real Madrid put together a performance which kind of speaks to how they've been playing this season, did what they needed to do, scored some good goals. I want to give a shout out to Karim Benzema. He's got 40 goals plus assists this season alone. So in combination of goals and assists in all competitions, he's got 40. He's also never missed a penalty in his 13 years at Real Madrid, which I find to be absolutely remarkable. And he scored another one today. That's amazing. To clinch that. Luka Modric, I just want to give a shout out. He's 36 years old, and he looked like vintage Luka Modric. This guy has so many miles on his legs. But the fact that he still has that spring, and that energy and that desire to get on the end of things, and Rodrigo, who set him up for the goal, if he can start doing what Vinicius is doing on the other side of the field, they are going to be absolutely unstoppable. They feel unstoppable right now. So I want to give a shout out to Madrid and all the Madridistas. I think Carlo Ancelotti's the perfect hire for them, and I think he's going to lead them to some trophies this season outside of the one they just won.
Wow. Jimmy, well said. I mean, the only thing I'd add to that is, again, that Rodrigo on the field, when you think about the project and recruitment, again, bringing in the next big star, it's hard to look past Benzema. I think they're going to struggle to see beyond his world just because the form he's been consistently in, and he hasn't kind of blown up the club in the way that every other big superstar does at a certain point at the club. Obviously, he's got his own skeletons in the closet from his earlier years. But when I think about the recruitment of that, knowing that you have a Rodrigo, knowing that you have a Vinicius Jr. now in form, you have an aging central three, sort of when you start to look at some of those pieces, you can go, okay, well, we've got the building blocks of something great, which I think is incredible. And the fact that they're still getting trophies, shout out to Marcelo. I didn't even know that he was still at Real Madrid, but he gets the trophy there. And huge respect to him because he's another player that sort of continued to evolve the left fullback position in a way that's made it exciting for a lot of players who never wanted to play it, like myself, to go, oh no, there's some fun things to do in that position if you get good enough at it. I wasn't good enough at it, but I did do some fun things throughout my career because I decided to play left fullback and not be a striker that didn't make it at any level. But the follow-up to that is also Villarreal. Obviously, I think this one goes under the radar just because of the fact that there was a trophy on the line this weekend. But dropping points in that match has huge I can't even think of the word.
Complications. Complications, my friend.
I don't know the word. Consequences. No, it's another C, guys. I'll tell you when I remember it. But yeah, somewhere between consequences and complications is what I'm looking for. And it might be both, and it might not even be a word. But the point is. You had a chance when others weren't playing in the league to get a result, and you should have gotten a result and you didn't.
Yep, similar to West Ham, of course, blowing it up a little bit to the extent of Leeds United winning. A good point here by producer Des Norris. Fair to say that Carlo Ancelotti made the right move by leaving Everton. Yeah, I think. And James Rodriguez, to be honest. Hey, get your money and just leave there. Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, let's move on here. Let's end it with our US M&T watch. We've already talked about Weston McKennie, but there's some other things that we can discuss. Final thoughts. By the way, US M&T hour on Monday. 5 p.m. Eastern, I believe, but might be corrected if that's changed. George Sargent, by the way, forced the Everton on goal, no good for him. Marseille, Lille, Augsburg with Pepe. Where do you want to go here? First to you, Heath Pierce. Where do you want to go?
I thought Ricardo Pepi looked like Daryl Dike did in his first couple national team games, where he just seemed desperate to score. He had a good look at one point. There was also a goal that I thought was going to count as well. But overall, it's good to see him on the field. I think you could see immediately how he fits into the scheme of things within the team. And now that he's been able to be a starter, it's only going to get better from here. I just preach patience to everybody except for the person that wrote the $20 million check. He has every right, or she has every right, to be impatient for that type of transfer fee. But yeah, Timmy Chandler was also, as Dan Kane said, Timmy Chandler has been playing pretty consistently this year, and there's even some shouts of getting him back into the national team, kind of a why not. It's not like that has been locked down. DeAndre Yedlin is in and out of minutes in, at his club. So is there a shout to get Timmy Chandler back on the field with the national team? I don't know if that'll ever happen, but yeah, overall, I thought the Ricardo Pepi thing was an important step forward. You went from minutes now a starter to him being desperate, but he did seem a little bit, as Jimmy mentioned earlier, Weston McKennie style of just trying to almost prove the worth or the value every time he had the ball. And I think he'll settle in quicker, and hopefully he goes back to doing all the things that we've talked about a million times in terms of what makes him good, and part of that is scoring goals.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about Ricardo Pepi, and I'm definitely not going to judge him harshly, I would say, as he makes this transition. It's a big, big move for a young person to handle in a lot of different ways, both on and off the field. So I want to give that 3 months. I want to give it almost till the end of the season to really give him that assessment that I think really speaks to his quality. And it's going to show. We already see little bits and pieces of it. His hold-up play, his movement, you know, it's all there. It's just now finding, as he said, finding that sweet spot.
Just say it, Jimmy. Josh Sargent is the new starter. He set up an own goal. Just say it, dude. Just say
no,
it.
But I didn't want to mention national team. No, Marseille, Lille. We had two Americans potentially going up against each other, and both Conrad De La Fuente and Timo Weah were out hurt. We need our guys to get healthy as soon as possible. We have a World Cup to qualify for, okay? So I was a little disappointed. They did not get any minutes and were out injured. Daryl Dike did get in, though, for West Brom in their 1-0 loss to QPR. Big loss for the club overall. It was fourth versus fifth. But good to see Daryl Dike get some minutes, and hopefully that'll turn into starts here moving forward. Hopefully that'll help them get promoted so we can see Daryl Dike in the Premier League next season.
All right, very quick on this question. What do you guys think about Cole Bassett to Feyenoord and Che to Hoffenheim? Heath?
I mean, I'll go very quick with this. Cole Bassett is one that he wasn't even starting for certain periods of the season in Colorado, and one that I really like in terms of a player. I think Feyenoord, the way that they play in a 4-3-3 system where he is triangulated and being forced to play both not just square and backwards but forward and combined through a midfield, I think is a great step for him and a great step forward for him. And then on the Justin Che one, I always worry about that. We're seeing Chris Richards right now go through the ebb and flow of playing and not playing, playing and not playing, but it's earned enough minutes for me to think, okay, he's a consistent starter based on his form. Justin Che, I worry about becoming the next Brian Reynolds in terms of, is there a spot for him? Does he have the stability, or does he have enough experience to go through the tough times of going straight to a club like that? I do like an 18-month loan because it gives him a little bit of time to develop.
Yeah,
he's going to, you know, maybe, I don't know where he can get his minutes or what his passport situation is, if he can play in the reserve team if he had to. But if it works out, it's a phenomenal opportunity.
No, I'm glad you mentioned the 18 months. I think those are both significant time periods for these players to feel relaxed. Sometimes we see loans that are only 6 months long, and it's hard to settle. And it's also hard for the players that are on the team to really accept you as one of their own.
Landon Donovan, 3-monther.
Yes. Yeah, one of those. It's just like it just feels more about marketing or something outside of actually what it's about, or helping develop these players. And I think 18 months is a really significant amount of time for these players to settle in on this back half of the season, and then also be part of the plans for the upcoming season after that. And I think that part of it is really, really important. So I'm excited that they're going to go to clubs that are going to compete, that have good players, that have good infrastructures. And I hope they get there. I actually hope they get real opportunities to try to break into the first team and show what they're capable of. Because you can sense there's a bit of a trend to start going after American players because of how well American players are performing in Europe.
Yep. Well, as I mentioned on Friday, I believe on HU, I said two things needed, right? You need to keep growing MLS and making sure that these players that are coming to Europe are going to the right places. That doesn't necessarily mean a big club. It means the club that can service you very best. Yeah, it's very difficult.
Money and evaluation of players makes it increasingly difficult. That hopefully it stabilizes and you go, okay, you know, Cole Bassett to Feyenoord. That's what I like, you know, the right next step. The player's going to Belgium right now, right next step. They can't all just go to big clubs, waste a year or two, and then drop back to where we need them. So I know it's easier said than done.
No, it is. But trust me, as a Peruvian, I know exactly how it is. All right. So let's end it with final thoughts. Jimmy Conrad, final thoughts.
Yeah, I'm going to jump on to something that producer Dez wrote in our notes about Erling Haaland and his comments coming out of somewhat nowhere, saying the Borussia Dortmund is forcing me to make a decision about my future, which is very German. They like to have their things sorted out 6 to 8 months in advance, which I find to be hilarious, even their managers. Remember when Marco Rosa announced from Borussia Mönchengladbach he's taking over Dortmund, even though he's still the manager of Mönchengladbach for the whole season, and the Mönchengladbach didn't win any games? That's weird. Nobody saw that coming. So I find this to be interesting as well with regard to Haaland. And now he's like, yeah, I guess I got to make a decision now. He's so chill about the whole situation, even though he's one of the most sought-after players in the world. So I'm curious to see what this means for him and for Dortmund, obviously, as well. And this is something to watch. I think this is a story that will have some answers here in the next week or two.
Yeah, I have nothing other to say, else to say to that. Well, guys, I'm really struggling with these words today.
Dude, well, I mean, what time is it right now?
It's 2:23. When I say today, guys, I'm in the future. It's tough. Oh, the language gets harder.
You have no. I'm saying it so people know that you are. Yeah. You know, nothing to apologize for. Keep going. Your final thoughts, my friend.
That I'm just disappointed that Gio Reyna is still out. I was excited about him coming in. I thought he'd get a good run of games or even two or three, work up to 45, 60 minutes before the national team camp, and he's not even on the bench still. So there must be something bigger, which I worry about because he's so young that some of these things, you know, I remember any injury that I got, it feels like you get past them, but you never really get fully past an injury. You're never really the same again. And, you know, some very few players can get back to that level. But I just worry about what this means to him physically for the long term, knowing how important he is for the national team and just what his upside is. I think he has potentially one of the highest upsides of any player in the history of the U.S. national team, or in the history of the U.S. soccer setup. But, you know, who knows what that could be if he's going to continue to be injured. Sorry.
Absolutely. No, that's good. My only final thought is Barcelona Femini face Real Madrid in a very big game. And listen, by the way, El Clásico will happen at Camp Nou, which is a historic thing for the women's team. And they are so close, within like 2 or 3 days of releasing their tickets, so close of being sold out. Unbelievable
stuff. In March, right?
Yes, it's in March. And it's a tremendous, tremendous message for the women's game. But I think at the same time, and I think our friend Colin Miller said it on Twitter, it's also a good example of what happens when you sell tickets at a reasonable price. Mm-hmm. People will come to the games. It's not just about, you know, making sure that you highlight whatever it is, but it's a great thing for Barcelona Femení and the women's game in Spain and in general. So well done there. Des Norris says, I think Barcelona's fans only chance of seeing their club win a Clásico these days. Mm. Very good point, Des. Listen, I'm trying to promote Barcelona Femení. I don't want to insult the male side. But
hey,
yes,
if I'm a Chelsea fan, I'm looking at the whole club. The women's if I'm a Barcelona side, fan, I'm looking at the whole club. If I'm an MLS fan, I'm looking at the whole club at certain points. And just so you know that you might always have, like, you know, some sunny days on the horizon.
I know. I just know that that's Dez's Irish little snarkiness coming in sometimes every now and again. But he has a point, though. Well done. But anyway, that's it. That's our weekend recap. Jimmy Conrad, thank you so much, my man.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Heath Pierce, go to sleep, my friend. Go to sleep.
Juntos es mejor.
Juntos es mejor. That's right. That's right. Together is always better. Thank you, everybody. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Kegolazo Pod, Heath Pierce on Twitter, Jimmy Conrad on Twitter, all of us on Instagram as well. Make sure that you leave a rating and review, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, CBS Sports, and your CBS Sports app. Have a great, great beginning to your week. USMNT Hour, 4:30 Eastern. Tomorrow, Monday, and we got a Fabrizio Romano special, which is actually touching on what Jimmy said about Erling Haaland as well. So we will see you then. Have a great evening. Till then.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.